Welcome to the City Club of Eugene September 30, 2016 program, Ballot Measure 97, the third program in the 2016-2017 programming year. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, Board President. The City Club of Eugene is a forum of ideas where a member-funded nonprofit that builds community vision through open inquiry. We help to formulate new approaches and solutions to problems by exploring a wide range of significant local, state, and national issues. Our members have a direct influence on public policy by discussing issues of concern with elected and non-elected officials, as well as policymakers. Become a member today at www.cityclubofeugene.org. There you can find upcoming programs and more information about our fundraisings. The program for today is supported by Luvaz Cobb, established in 1955. Luvaz Cobb is one of the oldest and most respected law firms in Oregon. City Club members and community at large, let's jump right into the topic, Ballot Measure 97. Today's program is coordinated by Lisa Arkin, and thank you, Lisa, for your coordination on this program. Oregon will face a $1.4 billion revenue shortfall in the next two-year budget cycle. Voters are scrutinizing Measure 97 as a possible way to increase income. Measure 97 will require C corporations doing more than $25 million of business in Oregon to start paying 2.5% tax on those sales. Advocates have promised the tax will create dedicated funding for Oregonians' priorities, education, healthcare, and senior services. Opponents refute this argument, saying that the proposed tax is regressive and will place an unacceptable burden on lower-income families. And I'm going to bring Lisa Arkin to introduce our speakers, and she will, in fact, present the format. Lisa?
Thank you, Juan Carlos. We have two wonderful speakers today. Paul Nicholson will argue against Ballot Measure 97. He earned his BA at the University of Michigan and an MA at Penn State University. And he has served on numerous boards, commissions, and served on the Eugene City Council from 1990 to 1995. Charles Sheketoff will speak in support of the measure. Chuck is the founder of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. Chuck is a 1988 graduate of the University of Oregon School of Law and a 1977 graduate of the University of Vermont. Today's format will go as follows. The first section will have our opening statements by our speakers. First will be Chuck Sheketoff. Second will be Paul Nicholson. We'll then break for discussion and formulation of questions from the audience. And our third section will be closing statements, perhaps rebuttal, from our speakers. First will be Paul Nicholson, followed by Chuck Sheketoff. May I have Chuck? Thank you.
It's great to be here. Thank you for the opportunity. I think it's really speaks volumes about the importance of this measure that this is the second time this club has had a forum on it. I watched the video of your February forum, and I really appreciate that you're doing that. It was an easy decision for the Oregon Center for Public Policy to support this. I'll tell you that we were not involved in the design of it. We were not involved in the polling and surveying of which of the various versions would go to the voters. We sit back and wait and see how that process goes, just like often with bills at the legislature. But once it came out, we discussed it and analyzed it and felt that it was no question that we need to support this. You know, 25 years ago is when Measure 5 was enacted or passed by the voters, and that shifted responsibility for funding for education onto the general fund. And now for a quarter of a century, we've had years of cuts and all talk and no action from the legislature to restore that funding. At the same time, we've had a situation where corporations have gotten gotten away with paying less and less of a share of our income taxes. And in fact, businesses in Oregon have the lowest state and local taxes as a share of the private sector economy of any state in the nation. The accounting firm Ernst & Young does an annual report for the Council on State Taxation at cost.org, which is about 500 or 600 of some of the largest corporations in the world. There's an old list of them they once made public on our website. And that study shows that we're last in the state, in the country. We have the lowest taxes. Do we have the lowest prices in the country? No. Why? Because taxes don't dictate prices. In fact, nationwide, state and local taxes are 0.8% of the cost of doing business. And so it's a common, you know, threat that this, that any tax measure is going to raise your prices. It's just not true. If that were true, we would have the lowest prices in the country. So what does this measure do? Well, first of all, before I go on to what the measure does, you know, your first question at your February forum was, the person that got to ask the first question was, if not this, what? For 25 years we've waited, what's the alternative? And the answer by Ryan Decker of the Oregon Business Association is, oh, I'll just clear my calendar for this afternoon, I'll talk with anyone. And that's all they want to do is talk, talk, talk. John Kitzhaber held months and months of talks with business leaders and labor leaders at Mahonia Hall, unable to come up with a solution. We've had 25 years of talk and no action. What does this measure do? In it, in Section 3, well, in the Supreme Court approved ballot title, it says it goes to education, healthcare, and senior services. And then Section 3 of the measure, it specifically says it has to be in additional funding, it's supposed to supplement, not supplant, education, healthcare, and senior services. Right now, those are about 80% of the state budget, and they will continue to be probably close to 80% of the state budget when this is expanded and we can buy back the cuts to education, we can get rid of the large class sizes, we can lengthen our school year, we can have more offerings. My son's a 16-year-old junior in high school, and he's a victim of Measure 5. I see that he has classes being canceled and too many kids in the classroom. Ryan Deckert complained to you that there were 33 kids in his child's class. He wanted it to be 28. To do that, you have to put adults in the building, and that's what costs money in education. And we can improve our high school graduation rate. It all takes money. For health care, we can provide better mental health care, which our state sorely needs. We can deal with addictions better. We can deal with affordability. We can make it so that the 280,000 or so Oregonians who don't have health care can get health care. We can cover all kids. Seniors, we can keep Oregon Project Independence going and improve it, which keeps seniors in their home. We can help those who are living in need assisted living and nursing home care to live in their final years in dignity. And we can maybe even deal with other things like property tax rebates that we've had to cut back on as a result of Measure 5. You know, When I was here at the U of O, you know, there was the homeowners and renters rebate program. That was one of the first things the legislature got rid of after Measure 5. The choice is really clear, as you heard at the introduction. The legislature is now facing, it wasn't this way back in January or February of 15 when the measures were filed, but legislature is now facing a $1.4 billion shortfall on about a $21 billion budget. And that means significant cuts to teachers and whatnot. I think we should get librarians back in the schools rather than kicking more of them out. This is a game changer. It really does allow us to start investing in those things that will keep us off the front page in the New York Times, like Doonesbury got us there back a number of years ago. It'll make it so that we have a better business climate. You know, in Salem, there's a Garmin facility at the airport. A number of years ago when they were expanding with some subsidy dollars and help from the city, the article about it talked to the manager, and he said, "What do you like about Salem?" He goes, "I get great engineers from OSU." Now, OSU is a commute from Salem, okay, an easy commute. And he was probably getting interns and then hiring them from there. That's what creates a good business climate, having a higher education system that can provide the workforce that we need, an earlier childhood education, and K-12 system that can provide the education that employees need and employers want. Corporations used to pay 18.5% of our taxes in 1973-75. They're now down to about 7%. There's a report about the decline of corporate taxes available on our website. It's called The Gaming and Decline of Oregon Corporate Taxes. And for those of you here at the City Club, it's out in the hallway. I urge you to get it. Before 1980, there were only 9 tax expenditures, subsidy-type things in our tax code for corporations. Now there are 51, and nearly half of those were enacted since 2001, 24 out of the 51. It's about $1 billion a budget period. And we know that the tax breaks don't work, and we should be getting rid of them, but that doesn't provide enough of the money that is needed to buy back the quarter of a century of significant cuts. I urge you all to look at who's funding the opposition to this campaign. It's Comcast. They do not have the interest of small businesses and consumers at heart. It's Wells Fargo. Again, they don't have the interest of consumers and small businesses at heart. Shell Oil, U.S. Bank. That's who's funding this. If they could pass along the costs, they would, and they would support the measure. That's why this business community has always supported a retail sales tax, because that immediately gets passed on. If they pass this on, if they try to include it in the prices, their revenues go up, and they have to pay more in taxes, so it makes no sense. At last, I would just like to say that, and we can talk about it more with the question and answers, the scheme for this is all it's doing is modifying what voters approved back in 2010, where we have a minimum tax that goes from $150 now to $100,000. It cuts it off at $25 million, $30,000 at $25 million, and then adds this 2.5%. And taxing C corporations differently than everybody else came from the Oregon Business Association when that measure was being drafted at the legislature. And treating them, and what this does is just changes that schedule so they start paying their fair share, and it falls on large companies like Wells Fargo and Comcast, and it'll allow investments in Oregon and buying back the horrible cuts since Measure 5. Thank you very much.
My name is Paul Nicholson, and some of you graybeards may remember my ancient political career, short and ancient. I was about to go on to say that I'm not a public speaker, and I proved it right away by not noticing the microphone. So you'll bear with me and grade me on a curve, please. So another proof that I'm not a public speaker, you know, public speakers are only supposed to have 3 reasons, and being a verbose ex-politician, I have 5. So first of all, you should read the full text of Measure 97. It's incredibly vague, and it can be interpreted any way the legislature chooses to interpret it practically. Proponents argue that it requires not only the Measure 97 funds to be spent on education, health care, and the elderly. Pardon me? Sorry, seniors. All right, so they not only argue that, but they also argue that the existing funds must also be devoted to those periods, to those purposes. But the actual language only says that it's in addition to other funds. You know, other funds means nothing. Besides that, the legislature is free to, they will draft this loose language into a statute. They can amend the statute at any time, and legislators can actually appropriate the money pretty much any way they wish. So I think there are really no guarantees that this money will be spent for that purpose. It also occurs to me that it's so loosely drafted, it could easily be used to solve the PERS problem. There's going to be a $21.8 billion. Okay, it's going to be a $21.8 billion deficit, unfunded liability in PERS, in the next 3 years. And, you know, it's a retirement program. There you've got the seniors. It has a healthcare component. So I would be concerned about that. If they don't use it for PERS, then we'll have to pass another giant tax if they keep their other promise. So, you know, the effect on even corporations that can't pass it on are going to be impacted. And by the way, all the research, I've brought little stickers that I can give you that will take you to all of my research, and you can look at it, check it out. All the credible independent research says that they will pass it on. For example, LRO, the Legislative Research Office, which is an independent office in the state government, they project that the average Oregon family is going to pay an extra $600 in taxes. And but I want to go on to say that the corporations that can't pass it on are still going to have problems. People don't have an idea of how huge this is when you talk about it as a gross receipts tax. It's not a sales tax. It's not a income tax. It's 2.5% on gross receipts. So let me give you some of the typical margins that these industries have. Wholesale trades, 1.6% margin on sales. So that means, you know, if they did not pass this tax along and made no other changes, they'd lose 1% on every sale. Retail trade is 3.2% on, so they'd make about, that would be about 80% of their profit. Information, that's 11.5%. Boy, have I been in the wrong industry all my life. Too late now. They'd still have 9% left, so they'll be okay. Grocery chains. That's 1.9%. They'd lose more than 0.5% on every sale if they did not pass these taxes along in the form of higher prices. So it's really implausible that it will not affect prices. Small businesses will pay the taxes indirectly. And, you know, some Oregon businesses will be devastated. A good example is the big car company, Lithia. Lithia does more than $25 million sales. Certainly the car companies are going to pass on the 1.5%. They'll be taxed at the wholesale level. Lithia, unlike all the other dealers in the state, will also have to pay 1.5% on their retail. That's $1,000 on an average car. And if you don't think that's going to devastate Lithia's business, you know nothing about business. You know, that's I think there are going to be a lot of unintended consequences. You know, the interesting thing is we agree, basically. We both agree that we need more revenue for the state. And ironically, my number five reason is that there are better solutions. And ironically, my very first solution is the same. You know, I was surprised to find when I was doing my research, I couldn't find an independent, credible economist who thought that subsidizing corporations was a good idea. And so this is an act that can be, this is something that could be done by the legislature, but if not, we, the citizens, should do it. We should outlaw corporate subsidies, and that will return, I came up with the same figure, $1 billion to the general fund. It's a disgrace. But there are other things. Look at the lottery, another thing that's universally reviled. Let's just can all the development hacks and the lottery department, and just send the profits directly to the school budget with do not stop go, no administrative expense, just goes right to the fund. And solution three is the most critical, in my opinion. You know, our tax policies should support our environmental policies. And we've been talking about the future of our kids and the future of our environment, the future of our air and water for years, and we've done nothing about it effectively. So I think that we should tax all of the companies that are putting externalizing their costs on the environment, making our air filthy and our water dirty. We should charge them a tax sufficient to clean up after them, and that will provide another $3 billion by my calculations. So let's have the citizens. Let's have the citizens send the legislation, and not our public unions. And it should be legislation that's truly progressive, and that will address the wide spectrum of the problems of the state, not just the budget shortfall. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chuck and Paul. Now we're going to take a few minutes to formulate your questions. Now remember that only City Club members get to come up to the microphone and ask questions. So go for it.
You're listening to KLCC, NPR for Oregonians, in Eugene, 89.7 FM, KLCC, KLCO Newport, 90.5, KLFR Reedsport, 89.1, and at 88.1, KMPQ Roseburg, KLFO Florence, KLBR Bend, on the web at klcc.org, on Facebook and Twitter, and we have an app for your smartphone or tablet.
So welcome back to the September 30th City Club program, Ballot Measure 97. Today's program is brought to you by our sponsors. These sponsors support City Club's building community vision through open inquiry. Hearing Associates, offering a full range of diagnostic and preventive hearing healthcare professional services, including diagnostic audiological evaluations, hearing aid fittings, and rehabilitative counseling. Our friends at Dot Dotson Photography, Eugene's imagery experts for over 80 years. Also want to take a moment to say a special thanks to our host, the Baker Center, for graciously hosting us every Friday. Thank you to our community television of Lane County for televising recent City Club programs that can be viewed Monday through Friday at noon, and Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and Sunday at 9 p.m. Now, let's get to the members' questions. This is going to work out. I'm going to ask members only to ask questions for 30 seconds. We'll ask the panelists that are already sitting here to answer for no more than 2 minutes. I know we can do this. If I see that you're taking more than 30 seconds, I'm going to be the bad guy and say, come on, get to the question here. Then after we're done with the first round of questions, then they will have time to do closing statements, and they will take no more than 3 minutes. Sometimes you hear things that they forgot, or they want to address something, it'll be up their time. With that in mind, let's go ahead and start with our first member, who's going to identify his or herself, and City Club member. First person, go ahead.
Bob Cassidy, City Club member. My question is to Chuck Shedikoff. We all understand that you feel that the lack of income for the state is coming from the lack of revenue from the corporations. The 51 tax loopholes that you speak of in the publication there, most of them in the last 10 years, the slogan at the legislature was always, this is done to create jobs, and we've got to promote the economy. Has the creation of jobs and the effect on the economy been a real live thing?
Okay, thank you, Bob. This is Chuck Shekatoff. You know, there's 51 and 24 since 2001, were enacted since 2001. If you got rid of all of them, it would not raise enough money. It's now easier to get rid of them. We've been arguing for years that it should be a simple majority, that they're not a bill for raising revenue requiring a 3/5. Legislative Council, the lawyers of the legislature, disagreed with us. and that stands with the legislature. But last year there was a Supreme Court case called Seattle Power or Seattle City and Light or Seattle Power City and Light that dealt with the phrase bill for raising revenue, and this summer the Legislative Council came to the two revenue committees in the House and Senate and said, we're going to allow you to change tax expenditures with a simple majority, so it's easier. The state does not have good records for many of them for whether or not they've created jobs. If you go to our website and you put in the word Tektronix in the search thing, you'll see a blog post where we got the head of the accounting department at Tektronix to say on the record at a hearing, Frank, honestly, if this were this research and development credit were not on our books, we wouldn't do anything any different. It's one of my and Phil Barnhart's favorite moments at the Capitol. So, you know, there isn't good data on how well, on how there isn't good accountability data on those. I do know that some of the largest corporations who are fighting this measure, you know, benefit from those tax subsidies in the program, and they'll continue to after this pass is approved by the voters. So, I appreciate the interest in trying to go after those. I think there's not enough money, but the legislature knows and likes to pass those tax cuts, and they're hard to get rid of, even if it's now only a simple majority.
Thank you, Paul. Next question.
Mike Rose, City Club member. My question is for Paul. And it's clear 25 years ago we passed Measure 5, and since that time, funding for education and quality in the state has declined. And these corporations are the same ones who want and demand an educated, trained workforce. And that's why they would come to Oregon to do business. The question is, yes, Paul, you're right. The legislature has the power to raise issues and possible ways to raise the money. However, they haven't. They won't. And they explain to us why they can't. So if not this, what alternative do you propose?
You know, my children were educated in the Eugene schools when they were wonderful, and it was before Measure 5. And to tell you the truth, even I supported both of the higher bracket income tax raises and I think that the wealthy should be, even though they affect me, I think the wealthy should be taxed and taxed more, and I think that's better than this, even though it's not ideal. I think far and away the most ideal solution is to really go out and pass a tax on serious environmental impacts. And it's because, you know, all this discussion is going to be irrelevant unless we start taking measures that actually stop people from dumping carbon in the air and pollution in the water. And my son's a climate scientist. He works for Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute. This is going much faster than anyone ever imagined. And so I just think all this is bullshit. You know, I mean, we need to get down to really taking measures that are going to protect the futures of our children and not just cooking up, you know, kind of crazy. This doesn't even tax Oregon corporations mainly, so all the considerations he brought up are kind of irrelevant. I mean, you know, the companies that are going to be taxed are mostly going to be out of state, and they're going to have all kinds of tax burdens. And, you know, I have the numbers from the Census Bureau, and they're meaningless too. They put us right in the middle of the pack, slightly above average. You know, this statistics game, we need to get past that and really do something about the inequity, the unfair income distribution in this country, and the environmental degradation that we're experiencing. Thank you.
There will be a blip in the program on Mondays. It's okay. So, audience members, now you know why. Go ahead, sir.
John Dahl, City Club member, and for Mr. Sheketov, I'd like to know what assurances do we have that the taxes will be used to fund education, health, and senior services?
Great question. So the question was, what assurances to fund education, healthcare, and senior services? The same assurances you had when we had when you might not like the lottery, but when you voted for the lottery, it would go to economic development. The details of how it's spent are decided by the legislature. They didn't need a legislative council opinion to say, oh, this can be changed by the future legislature. It's sort of black letter law, as they say in law school, that one legislature, whether it's the legislature in Salem or it's the voters acting as the legislature in initiatives, cannot dictate to a future legislature specific spending things. So even the stuff that's on the ballot today, other stuff like the stuff for improved graduation rates, right, and putting more money into career technical training. The 2017 legislature, I don't think they would, but they have the freedom to change that. And that's how it works. Just like, you know, the membership of the city club gives to the board of directors the authority to make decisions about what kind of food and how much to expend on food and brochures and other things for the city club, you have to give the legislature that leeway. You cannot, it's a political decision. We want some of the money to be spent outside of that, sort of technically, so I want to have a bigger rainy day fund. The legislature could create a rainy day fund for education, senior services, and healthcare. That would give us a third rainy day fund. We already have the Education Stability Fund, and we have the Oregon Rainy Day Fund. But that's silly. Why create a third fund? 80% of our spending today is education, healthcare, and senior services. When my first debate on this issue, the head of the Portland Business Alliance kept saying the same thing, and finally the fourth time she said it, I said, I'll bet you your salary that they'll spend, then that time it was $5 billion, they'll spend $5 billion on education, healthcare, and senior services. I didn't know at the time, but I still take the bet with her. She makes $360,000 a year. I'd still do the bet. I'd actually maybe more enthusiastically. So it'll go to those things, and it's, you know, your obligation is to talk to your legislators. And Nancy Nathanson's head of the Ways and Means Committee, if the Democrats maintain control of the House. So I think it'll get spent there.
Thank you. Next.
Hi, I'm Janelle McCoy. I'm a City Club board member. And actually, I have a clarifying question for either or both of you. Why are they taxing gross sales versus net profit?
Sure, that's a great question. So, a little the history of this tax. In 1929, when we created the corporate income tax, the legislature included a $25 minimum tax for the, quote, for the privilege of conducting business in Oregon. Later that year, after they adjourned and left Salem, they had the stock market crash on my father's fourth birthday. And then in 1931, they lowered it to 10 bucks, and that's where it stood until voters approved in 2010 the current minimum tax. In 2000, that was a vote on a legislation that passed in 2009. When the legislature was looking at how to meet the budget during the recession, because of the recession, they said, how can we raise more money? The business community was embarrassed by the 10 cent tax and said, $10 tax, excuse me, and said, here are some proposals. Associated Oregon Industries said $300 for every business, regardless of profits, regardless of structure. The Oregon Business Association came in and said, no, we think it should be $250 for every business, regardless of profits and structure, but then have a sliding scale up to $25,000, which they later amended to $50,000. And the legislature said, no, we're going to have it at $150 for everybody, regardless of profit. And then for C corporations, and if people don't know what they are, I can answer that to a question. For C corporations, they're going to pay on a sliding scale up to $100,000. All this measure does is change that Oregon Business Association plan. It was the Oregon Business Association that came up with having a minimum tax, an alternate minimum tax based on sales. Theirs went up to $50,000, the legislature went up to $100,000, and this one's taking it from the $30,000 phase at $25 million and saying it's going to be at 2.5%. This came from the business community to have that. It's disingenuous for them to criticize that when this was theirs. You can look at the documents on our blog post on our website at occpp.org. Thank you.
Paul?
Yeah, since this was to both of us, you know, I have to say that I don't think that that's the reason. The reason is that 2.5% looks really little, you know. People don't realize how small the margins are for most of these businesses. And that's the reason why it's totally implausible to think that these taxes will not be passed through as higher prices if they can do it. And if they can't do it, it's going to be damaging for the business. And So my past experience with the legislature is you can't trust them to spend the money as dictated. And I guess that Chuck agrees with me that there's nothing in the language that would prevent them from spending it on solving their purse problems. So I think those are all serious matters to consider when you consider whether you're going to vote for this regressive measure.
Next member.
Good afternoon. Thomas Price, PAC Info and Simplified Computing. We sponsor and host your website for the City Club. Being that said, I'm also one of your sustainability commissioners for the City of Eugene. And while I side with Paul a lot of times, we have to think about the bigger picture and evaluate. PAC Info was one of your original companies that brought in internet and your email service to you. Right now, PAC Info and others can't even leverage the new fiber optic system that you're going to be putting in or be your provider anymore because the big corporations hold your market under Comcast and CenturyLink. So that being said, the question is, what keeps these big companies from shifting their C Corp to a B Corp and getting out of this tax?
So thank you for the question. The measure does include a provision that says B companies, Oregon B companies. This is Chuck Shakatoff answering the question. Flashed a little reminder for the listening audience. The measure does exempt Oregon B companies from being the tax, and that was a part of the measure that we frankly didn't like. I was surprised to see that that's the one the proponents went with. And the B companies, I just learned at an event Wednesday evening, are going to be coming to the legislature, the Oregon B companies, and trying to get that out because they don't think they should be exempt. That's not why they created B companies. But to create a B company, it requires some votes of the shareholders and whatnot, and the large ones would never be able to do that. And so, you know, there are some very large, fairly large companies like Patagonia who are B companies or whatnot, but a company on the New York Stock Exchange probably isn't going to be able to become one. And the measure regrettably only deals with Oregon B companies, not national ones, and that's probably a legal problem for that provision in the measure as well. So, you know, I hope the B companies come in and take that out because it just messes up the measure.
Paul, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, as far as if we're foolish enough to pass this measure, we certainly should tax B companies too.
Okay. Next person.
My name is Ruth Miller, and I'm a member of the City Club for a long time, known Paul for a long time. And my question, and it's a question that I think it was a non-member, if the concern is that business will just pass the tax cost on to consumers, isn't that the argument against raising any taxes forever?
Can we ask Paul to go first? Go ahead, Paul.
You know, I don't think it is. You know, there are various, as I said myself, I still prefer raising the creating a new bracket with an even higher rate because I think that taxing income is fairer. Sales taxes are very regressive. But I also think that the reason why the rich have gotten richer and corporations have gotten more and more powerful is because we are not holding them to account for their externalities. And I think Chuck's thinking way too small. I mean, we're not going to solve our fundamental problems unless we make corporations pay for the things they're doing to our environment and for their social impacts too, you know. And so, I mean, the obvious ones are, you know, the legislature right now is talking about having a per mile tax for drivers. So a guy who's driving a Prius who's already subsidizing the system, they're going to charge him more, you know. And I've been arguing that, you know, those diesel trucks that are going up and down the highway, besides dumping tons of carbon into the air, you know, they do 180 times the damage that a Prius does, road damage and so forth. So why should we be increasing the tax on passengers light passenger cars and letting the truckers off free. This is the kind of thing we need to address, and that's the kind of places we should get some more revenue.
So I'm not thinking small. I'm thinking $6 billion to fund teachers in the schools, healthcare for people, and education. And I'm just dealing with reality, Paul. I didn't come here to debate whether we should have a carbon tax or a per mile tax. That's not on the ballot. It's up on the ballot in Washington State, and I think that'll be telling about whether or not it could happen here. That also has been discussed here for years, not quite as long as 25, but it has been discussed. But the reality is this is the choice before the voters. $1.4 billion worth of cuts, or invest $6 billion in schools, in teachers, in librarians, in school health nurses. To the question about isn't that used against it? Absolutely. It was that they said in 66 and 67 they do fight against the tax on upper income people, because that's who gets that upper income people, those who get it, the large corporate executives. So they fought both of those. I think they were more upset about the upper income tax than the measly little corporate tax and new minimum tax in 67. They will use that argument every time. And in fact, on this measure, it's like you can't have it both ways. You can't say it's a sales tax that's getting passed on, right? It just doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. If they could pass this on, if they truly could pass it on, they'd be in support of it. That's why the business community, if you look at all the discussions that have happened, go back to the hearing in 2013 at the legislature when John Kitzhaber talked about the meetings at Mahonia Hall, all the proposals from the business community have a retail sales tax, and that is one that's passed on. This one, you don't want to pass it on, and why would they pass it on? Because if you add it to the cost, the bikes you sell, and I'm sure you're selling more than 25 million, you'll have to pay more in taxes. Okay, you have to pay in more taxes, so it makes no sense to add it on. And it also ignores the fact that you can go online and buy from Best Buy, have it delivered to the local Best Buy store, and you know what? Groceries, you can do that too soon. So it's just not gonna get passed on, and that is the argument. It's from an old playbook they have. They just keep bringing it out.
Next person, and we do have some time for more questions if you're gonna come up. Otherwise, Sandy and Lisa, if you have questions.
Emily Semple, member of City Club. My children are 28 and 26 years old, and I watched the schools deteriorate while they grew up. They got out just in time. So we've waited 25 years to rescue our schools. I think this is incredibly important. So since it could be changed to some of our other needs, would passing this make it harder to pass Paul's ideas, some of which could benefit us in other ways, like reducing pollution? We've got PERS, we've got education, we've got healthcare. How are we going to take care of all of it, and will this prevent any of Paul's ideas?
You know, I think that, first of all, I have stickers that have the address, the internet address, to the online version of these documents, and I have all the research links there. Now, the evidence that a substantial part of this will be passed on is just overwhelming. And besides that, a business can't run at a loss. Many industries don't make 2.5%. They have to pass on the tax in increased price. You know, so I think that going back to the question though, I think that the problem with this measure is that it's so poorly drafted that you cannot be assured that this won't be mostly sucked up by the vast PERS deficit, and that it won't address the schools the way it should. I think that it's absolutely imperative that we pass a tax to increase funding for schools. It's an easy thing for the legislature to, and maybe they won't do it, but I mean, the citizens have got to draft something and fight for something that makes more sense than this vague measure that offers no guarantees that the money will be actually used for the purposes that it specifies, and which could be gobbled up by PERS, and which is so poorly drafted that it can be interpreted in any way. So we can do another. It's too bad. This is like the PANCAL library. You know, it was a lousy library, and we got a good one by not passing the PANCAL measure.
So I don't know whether it changes it for our carbon tax. I know that it puts the measure back in the legislature's court to respond. We've got the money. They've been talking and talking. They've been talking about a carbon tax. I think probably the vote in Washington State will be a better indicator of whether it gets easier in Oregon to also do a carbon tax. Will having this on the books bring some of the same bad guys like Comcast and Wells Fargo to the table? Maybe it will. I don't know where they stand on a carbon tax. So,
next question.
I'm Sue Walling, City Club member, and this is for both of you. I have heard that one of the issues with the tax is that if a corporation sells something to another corporation before it goes to the consumer, that the tax gets sort of added on so that by the time it reaches the consumer, it could be a higher tax. How big a deal is this?
It's not a big deal because it's so few companies are paying this. So, for instance, And there's a myth out there that everything you buy at a grocery store, that company that created those, like, you know, Kellogg's is a taxpayer. They aren't. You're not a taxpayer in Oregon just because you sell something here. You have to have what's in the law called nexus, a connection to the state. And it's more than a salesperson. You're allowed to have a sales force. You can't have an office for them. They can work out of their homes or they can come in temporarily. But as long as you don't have a building here and all they're doing is selling, all that stuff in a grocery store, they're not corporate taxpayers in Oregon. Okay, so for instance, out of the 1,405 corporations, C corporations that are in the industry of agriculture, forestry, hunting, and fishing, only 10 are going to pay this tax. We have a card out on the table, and it's available on our website and a blog post. There's only of the 702 C corporations who are in the industry group accommodation and food services. The Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association, right? They have 3,000 members. There's 10,000 businesses in that industry group. Only 14 are going to pay this tax. It's just not going to keep multiplying like that. It just won't happen. Because, you know, like the stuff, you know, all the stuff sold at Best Buy, a lot of that stuff isn't taxed by Oregon. You know, if those companies don't have people here, don't have more than just a salesperson here, they're just shipping the goods in, that's not taxed. And again, why would Best Buy charge you more for the TV in the store when you can do it from the comforts of your home, buy it online, have it delivered to the store for free, or maybe even to your home for free? They wouldn't do it.
Paul?
Price isn't the only factor, that's true, in purchasing decisions. But, you know, the problem with that argument is that, yeah, it won't affect most companies, but some companies are going to be wrecked. I mean, consider market of choice. You know, the Safeways, the Albertsons, the big chains command 90% of this market. As I say, they have no impediment to passing on their things. They have lots of competitive advantages. We go, you know, but smaller chains of groceries, they buy their stuff from wholesalers. So the wholesaler will pay the tax at the wholesale level, and then at the retail level, market of choice will be subject to that. If it's a C corp, I don't know whether it is, but as an example, a business like that will be devastated if they're in fact subject to the tax. And there are quite a few small grocery chains, and tell them that it doesn't matter much.
Did we have one more question, or were you in line? Done? Okay, so the last thing we're going to do is we're going to do closing statements, and each panelist has up to 3 minutes to do closing. And so since Chuck went first, we're going to allow Paul to do the closing statements. Go ahead, sir.
You know, I understand where Chuck's coming from, and I'm empathetic. It's very hard to pass a tax, and it's easy to become frustrated and think that a really bad measure is better than nothing. But, you know, I think that the initiative process was really meant for citizen legislation, and I really think that citizens draft better legislation than this thing. And I think we should go back to the drawing boards and come up with a good measure. I mean, as I say, it's just like the PANCAL library. I mean, I was like the skunk at the garden party when I defeated that crappy library on the fourth and third and fourth floors of a subsidized office building you know, but we got, we supported a quality library. That's a great asset to the city. We shouldn't have a crappy tax either. You know, we should go back, bring something that isn't sponsored by a special interest group and which isn't being grossly misrepresented, you know? I mean, all the stuff about the highest tax, I mean, it's irrelevant. We're not even taxing Oregon corporations. You know, we're taxing corporations from other states. And the number is cooked, too, you know? You can find a number anywhere from 1 to 50, you know? And so I'd say, you know, let's have an honest campaign on a good measure and not suffer for, settle for a vague piece of crap, which is what this measure is.
And Chuck?
It's Chuck Shagatoff, and of course I think a little differently than that. It's been 25 years since ballot measure 5, and the legislature has talk. Some other people have circulated petitions to try to start other ballot measures. They've never gone anywhere. The business community, the only thing they have pushed is a tax that every single one of you absolutely would pay, which would be a sales tax, a retail sales tax. That's the only thing the business community has ever come up with to have. And on this time, when you ask them, what's your alternative? All they say is, Ryan Deckard, I'll clear my calendar and we'll talk this afternoon. Talk, no action. And this isn't a debate about whether we have a climate tax or anything like that. This is a debate about what do we do in the upcoming legislative session when they're facing a $1.4 billion shortfall, or do we take this as an opportunity to buy back the changes? Now, I can't promise you anything for the day after election, except one thing. Oregonians will still buy cars. If Lithia Motors doesn't want to sell them, tough luck. Okay? They will still buy cars as much as we prefer they'd buy more bikes. But they will still buy cars, okay? And so, you know, that's going to happen. The world's not going to end like they said it would. It was interesting in the 66-67 debate, Gresham Ford was one of their poster children. They said, we won't be able to give $100 to a charity when you buy a car. They're still doing it. Okay, it's the same old thing that they're going to go out of business, and it's not. Comcast, Wells Fargo, Shell Oil, those are the people behind the opposition to this because they don't want to pay their fair share. Corporations used to pay 18%. And now they're paying around 6%. If this passes, if voters approve it like they should, vote yes, we'll be at about the middle of the pack, around 21st highest, according to the Ernst & Young study. So that's what we should do. There's no alternative, and we need to make sure that Comcast and Wells Fargo and the others start paying their fair share so we can get teachers back in the school, get the librarians back in the school, more school nurses, seniors can age with dignity, healthcare to kids, healthcare to the over 200,000 Oregonians who don't have it, mental health services, addiction services, which would address a whole bunch of issues that I know all of the members of the City Club care about, and so I would just encourage you to vote yes on Measure 97. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we conclude today's program, I have several announcements. But first, let's give another round of applause to our speakers, Paul Nicholson and Chuck Shekinoff. They both certainly bring vision and clarity to ballot measure 97. And to all of you members who were sticking to the script to ask the question in less than 30 seconds, good for you. Proud. And thanks to our sponsors, Luvaz Cobb, Heron Associates, and Dotson Photography. If you are passionate about democracy and want to influence what our community sees and hears at City Club events, consider joining City Club's program committee. They're actively recruiting both men and women, and also racial Latin minorities. Help us direct the conversation here in Eugene. Show us your support by helping us with their first ever annual event, which is happening October the 15th from 3 to 5 p.m. This will be at Magnao Musical Salon in Heavy Hors d'oeuvres, held at the home of the Oregon Bach Festival Executive Director and mezzo-soprano Janelle McCoy. And more information you can find at www.cityclubofeugene.org. Join us next week, Friday, October the 7th, for Oregon's 4th District U.S. House of Representatives Candidate Forum, featuring incumbent Peter DeFazio and challengers Art Robinson and Mike Bielstein. Additional information about this topic in the forum you can find on our website. And for opportunities to volunteer. We're always looking for volunteers. Do you have any interest in civic engagement, in education, in sharing information? Join us today. Tell a friend. Bring a friend. Help us being a good host. We're open-minded. We're open to the public. My name is Juan Carlos Valle. Thanks for attending today's program. And this concludes today's program. Thank you.